Mitchell, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, I'm excited to hop on and dig into this space a little bit.
Welcome to Dialed Up, a podcast where we take the biggest problems facing agriculture, dial the volume up, and explore what's being done to fix them. I'm your host, Eleni Paulson. The problem? Sustainable farming needs more support. That's right. This season, we're exploring the economics of sustainable farming. In order to develop food systems that are environmentally sustainable, we need to make them economically sustainable. And that involves a lot more than just financial support. In the first episode, we dove into the history of sustainable farming practices. We discussed the rise of conventional farming, identified a few ways that farming can be sustainable, and previewed our two focus points for this season: government support and private support. But what exactly does that support look like? Spoiler alert, it looks like collaboration. Support from governments and corporations, but also support from consumers and from farmers themselves. We all need to work together to establish a truly sustainable system for sustainable farming. First and foremost, let's ground ourselves in what farmers are doing to help themselves. Today, you'll hear an interview with Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Washington County, Iowa, and the founder of a company that compiles soil health data for farmers. Farmers use this information on soil health to benchmark their own sustainable farming practices and to make plans for the future of their operations. They also gather their own data with Continuum Ag, the name of Mitchell's company. You'll hear more from Mitchell himself, but his story is a shining example of sustainable farmers recognizing the power of their practices. They also appreciate the time it takes to adopt these practices and ensure support for the larger community of sustainable farmers. Now, before we dive into Mitchell's story, it's important to note that he'll be talking about a few things that we haven't yet covered in this season. He'll be talking about how governments and private companies can support sustainable farmers. But more important than that, he'll be talking about how farmers help each other, and how growers can help themselves on the road to sustainable agriculture. It's important that we hear from Mitchell first, so that we can have some grounding in how growers feel about their sustainable farming practices. We'll get into the nuances of government and private support for crop insurance later in this season, but for now, pay attention to how Mitchell talks about other farmers, gathering data for other farmers, sharing data with other farmers, and sharing knowledge and practices. Let's jump in.
My name is Mitchell Hora. I'm a seventh generation Southeast Iowa farmer near Washington, Iowa. We farm about 700 acres that I farm with my parents. And so mom and dad are out, you know, dad's out on the farm full time. I spend most of my time running my company, Continuum Ag, but we'll get back to that later. On the farm, it's, like I said, 700 acres. We started using no-till in 1978 and using cover crops in 2013. We've raised six different crops in the last couple of years. This year, we'll have corn, soybeans, and cereal rye. Last year, we added to that blend malt barley. We had some seed mustard. We've had wheat in the past. And just really trying to, you know, practice what we preach, trying to be very innovative and showcase to other farmers creative means of adopting the soil health principles and making it work really profitably. Because that, if it's not profitable, it's not gonna work. And so on our farm, it's about being able to utilize biology as the driver of fertility management, weed management, water management, soil resiliency. But at the end of the day, we gotta be profitable. And so we're all up for experimenting. And a lot of the things that we do, you know, we start them out relatively small scale, you know, 10 acres or so, which is still plenty big, but trying a bunch of different stuff and seeing what learns, and then we scale it up from there. And, but last kind of bit on that, you know, is I'm in an area of Iowa, Washington County, where there are lots of other farmers that are also no-till and cover crops. And we're really able to learn as a community of growers. And then my company, Continuum Ag, is a soil health data company. So then, you know, Continuum Ag brings the data to the table, helping farmers be able to quantify their soil health metrics, and be able to strategically move the needle. utilizing our global consultant network.
There's a lot to
now
unpack
farmers
there.
Are interested in,
Mitchell
okay, well, how else can I utilize this
in his
data?
Explanation.
And a lot of people are after it to be able to make
products.
A carbon claim or
in order
water
to make
quality
sustainable
claim
farming
or other
possible,
sustainability,
it's got to be
driven outcome.
Remember in episode
and we
one,
just want our
when
farmers
we went back
to
World War II, we made farms very,
get
very
that data
efficient
to work
back
for them.
Then.
And
we found
if it
ways for growers to make
for
as much money
farms,
as possible with as little labor as possible, or so we thought at the time. For a grower to transition from one method of farming to a new method of sustainable farming, they have to be sure that this new method will be profitable for them. At the end of the day, if your new methods will cost you your farm, they're not worth exploring. So, how do you make this type of farming profitable? Good question. That's one that sustainable farmers have been trying to prove to each other for years. If you take more time, spend more effort caring for the soil, then are you really being as efficient as possible? Many farmers argue that, yes, you are being efficient, because your farm will return good crops for many generations to come. Additionally, you can be more efficient and more profitable by spending less money on inputs. Fertilizers, water, pesticides, these are all inputs, and farmers like Mitchell Hora argue that these sustainable practices reduce our need for spendy inputs, hence earning more for the farmer. Mitchell also mentioned carbon markets. We'll address those later in the season, but for now, you need to know this. Sustainable farming can allow farmers to make money on more than just their crops. They can sell the fruits of their labor, or the carbon they're able to sequester, to companies that have committed to sustainability goals. You know the Fortune 500 companies that claim to be carbon neutral by 2030? Farmers can help with that. And if a farmer is being paid to help with that, that's additional farm profit that doesn't come from the crops themselves. Let's get back to the interview.
Great. That's helpful. It's helpful for me in understanding, you know, sort of the layout of a journey with sustainable or regenerative agriculture. The way that you explained what you do and why you do it really emphasizes this deep understanding of soil health and how soil health can bring profit to a farm, but also can push forward these other initiatives like water quality, carbon, other sustainable emission initiatives, rather, that you might hear from larger consumer companies.
Well, I think a big quick caveat on that, and like to the point on the audience here, is that we have to be able to portray soil health systems and conservation efforts, regenerative practices, however you want to frame it. It has to be a offensive tool that's a economically viable business decision. I think cover crops to this point have really been, you know, they've been marketed as a defensive tool, meaning defense against water quality issues in the Gulf of Mexico and defense against soil erosion and stuff like that. But I think it really has to be an offensive management tool. And where, because farmers are spending a lot of money on it, and there's a lot of taxpayer money being spent on it and such too. So for us, it's offensive data management tool, and that cover crop is my nutrient stabilizer. And that cover crop is my weed management tool. And that cover crop is my water infiltration tool. And that cover crop is my helping to keep that soil temperature cooler and help to keep my life and my soil more active. And I think it's just a slight little change of mindset there that really helps. And that's where, obviously, you know, I'm biased towards utilizing the data. But because of looking at it like that, and because of our data, we've been able to decrease our synthetic fertilizer use by 45% and decrease our pesticide use by up to 75%. And we've improved our water infiltration to 4 inches of infiltration in less than 5 minutes, while maintaining the same yields as what we had before and maintaining record yields, even if, you know, we've had some pretty adverse weather the last couple of years here in Southeast Iowa, and but able to maintain and be more resilient against weather issues.
That's a great point. I appreciate the idea of shifting our perspective from it being a defensive tool to an offensive tool. Yeah. I think in many conversations about sustainable agriculture, sustainable food, there's this focus on what is the problem, what have we not done up until this point? And then how do we back ourselves into a system that's more effective? But that is not how we need to see it. There is a separate mindset that's so much more focused on, you know, yes, maintaining yield and yes, making sure we're producing enough food, but also making sure that the land you're on is sustainable for your future, making sure you're farming in an efficient way, looking ahead.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of this. We have to maintain the yield. We have to maintain the production to feed a growing population, but I mean, it's gotta be with more nutrient dense food. I mean, that's a huge one. That to me is just the exciting part, is all of these other benefits that farmers are going to be able to create here, like the hyper on carbon. Like I get it. I mean, that's where all the headlines are at. It's fine. But all the other things that come along with improving soil health are so much more exciting and like so much more long-term. And I think just are going to relate to the consumer and relate to the taxpayer and relate to people, you know, throughout the supply chain so much better, because it's just more tangible. And as we go after though fixing those problems, we're going to stack all these different benefits. I mean, so, but a focus on, you know, when you improve soil health, you're able to get all these different outcomes. So, I mean, it's definitely not a silver bullet, one size fits all, but the principles and being creative as to adopting those principles, that can create a numerous amount of outcomes.
Sure. That leads to the food that we want to be cooking at home and that we want to be seeing in the grocery stores and that we want to be able to afford. Which brings me to my next point. I think you've really emphasized the data that you need in order to create an effective system. Can you tell me a little more about that data and starting Continuum Ag and where you hope that will go?
Yeah, so I started Continuum Ag in 2015 when I was still up at Iowa State. And Continuum Ag really started with my first customer actually was a group in South Africa that was trying to understand the Haney soil health test. And I had built a Excel model that summer during an internship that we were using to help to manage Haney data. And I was like, well, hey, I've been working on this soil health Haney data all summer. You know, shoot me what you got and I'm happy to take a look and help you out. After I sent them the data back, they said, all right, send us an invoice. And I had a company. So now it was in the works and I was planning stuff out, you know, for like 2 years leading up to that point. But that's really what launched it. And I've been to South Africa a couple times, you know, since that time and still work with those guys today. But, you know, started out really by helping farmers to understand the Haney test.
Quick note here before Mitchell continues. The Haney test is a type of soil test. Farmers use it to test their soil for organic matter, for carbon sequestration, and for other things that indicate soil health. So what Mitchell's really talking about here are measures of soil health that farmers need to understand how sustainable their operations are, or how resilient their soil is, or how well their crops perform in the long haul.
And what we find is that when farmers are switching their system from being chemistry driven to being biologically driven, they need to have management tools and data that is biologically driven. And regular soil sampling was not working for these farmers. Dad stopped using it on our farm because the results weren't making any sense. And so many of my farmers, they say regular soil sampling data, meaning like Malik and Bray and Olson type soil sampling that farmers have done for decades to evaluate phosphorus and potassium and whatnot in the soil. When you have a biologically driven system, the old chemistry tools don't work for you anymore. Then we started using the Haney test and everyone was like, oh, wow, this data makes so much more sense, because in the Haney test, we're looking at what nutrients are biologically available to the plant. And we're finding that when you're in a biologically driven system like we are, and that most of my farmers in this area are because of the no-till and the cover crops, but also a huge use of manure in this area too, that most of the nutrient that's in the soil is in the organic form. So it's proteins and amino acids and enzymes on the nitrogen component, and it's organic phosphorus plus inorganic P2O5. But we just need a more robust tool to be able to quantify all that, but also to be able to quantify the biological activity and quantify the food for those microbes. And, you know, and over time, Continuum Ag was, you know, we were building the company and getting a lot of data, and we needed better data tools to be able to manage all of it and be able to make recommendations off of this. There was no existing soil platforms that could help us to make a recommendation utilizing the Haney test. So we built our own, and it's called Topsoil. And so now, I mean, we're able to semi-automatically provide variable rate fertility recommendations for farmers utilizing soil health. And now, you know, by helping them to move the needle there and show progress, we're also helping them to connect that story and connect that data with companies that are wanting to, you know, be able to quantify and tell a sustainability story. So been very interesting to see how that all progresses, but a key kind of take home on that is that the farmers, you know, throughout all these initiatives, it's all great, but the farmers have to be able to thoroughly understand and learn the principles and want to be able to make a change on their farm, not just chase a new carrot or it's not gonna work. It's gonna fall apart. And we don't know. Hopefully those dollars can be long-term.
When Mitchell mentions growers getting creative, you know, in their farming practices, there are hurdles that growers have to go through in order to get creative.
I think it can be long-term.
Some growers farm on their own land, but some farm on rented land. They're not the only ones in charge of what they farm and how long they're doing it. Growers are also driven by markets, by insurance, by weather patterns, and by their biggest customers.
More evident than ever.
Like any business, farms have stakeholders, and every stakeholder has different requirements. That's one of the biggest challenges with sustainable farming, getting creative in a way that fits everyone's definition of success. As you've heard, Mitchell and other farmers have well-planned, progressive practices in place on their farms today. They're data forward and they're actively adjusting both their practices and their mindsets while maintaining focus on near-term and long-term success. I had one big question for Mitchell. As more and more farmers explore sustainable farming practices, how exactly can we enable adoption?
Step number one is we got to help farmers to be able to quantify where they're at. I think that's step number one. Okay. So it's quantifying where you're at and establishing that initial baseline of where do you sit today? Now, what we're trying to bring to the table is the rest of the benchmark data set so that a farmer doesn't just get their data and they're like, okay, well, here's where I'm at today. But what does that mean? Am I good or bad or what? So through Topsoil, we're able to say, well, here's how you rank compared to other similar farms and then be able to dial in the data set even more robustly from there, especially as that critical mass of data is really needed or as is hit in different geographies. But step number one, help a farmer to be able to understand where they're at today. If we can quantify what their carbon footprint is, that's great. But even just be able to quantify the soil health metrics and establish, okay, where are we starting today? Then we help them to identify, okay, well, what are the opportunities to improve? And it's opportunities to improve profits. That's what it's about. They don't care about, okay, sure. Yeah. I want to improve my carbon and water quality, whatever, but I got to improve my bottom dollar. That's what it's about. I mean, and it's not just about money, but like, I mean, farmers, we're running businesses here. And if the farm goes broke chasing after this dollar or chasing after a credit or whatever, what's the point? It all falls apart if we don't ensure that the economics are going to be there, which means that farmer needs to have trusted advisors around them. And they need to be able to work with other farmers. They need to be educated and they need somebody to hold their hand. And the current ag infrastructure that we have today is not equipped to be able to do that. Now they can learn and they can help to maybe be the initial touch point, but we got to have more educators behind the educators at massive scale. And data helps us do that. So initial data, identify opportunities to improve, hold their hand to work all the way through it, and then be able to quantify those outcomes. If you're going to help a farmer to adopt cover crop, there's so much innovation and such a wide, diverse impact that cover crop can make based on how it's managed and how creative that grower gets into being aggressive to allow that cover crop to actually do something for them. Now, at the beginning, they need to not be super aggressive. They need to be realistic and they need to be cautious. And that's why they need to have people that can help them to make the right decisions. And we're getting now, what's been really interesting to me on that is we're starting to get, at least in my like localized geography, we're starting to get to some of the later adopters of soil health, which is very interesting. So like later adopters of cover crops. We're already through the innovators and the early adopters, and now we're getting to the late adopters. One of the very few places in the country, probably in the world, that that's happening. And it's just starting right now. Very, very interesting. But these guys need somebody to hold their hand. That's a big one. And being able to have some data to help them to make the right decisions. They want to see the stories. They want to see the case studies. They need to come out, and they've got to have a little touch and feel to how is this supposed to work. But it's very interesting, you know, to see that some of these later adopters are starting to come to the table. And we need to make sure that they have the right tools to equip them to be smart, but to make their own decisions. They're entrepreneurs, they're CEOs, they're running their own company. They have to make the decision, and they need to have the freedom and the tools to allow them to do so.
And through all of this, it seems like, you know, the farmers can really be the catalysts for the conversation, the catalysts for change, but the support comes in with, you know, the support comes in a couple different ways, but support for education, support for data collection is huge. And if we use systems to help quantify and to help quantify those goals so that private corporations or other funders can get involved, that's all the better.
It adds a quantification
on one side of the spectrum, and then education, resources, tools for the other.
But in many ways, it is much more complicated than that.
To be able to just continue
next week, we'll dive in a little deeper and see how we can really bring these ideas to life from a government perspective.
But
thanks for listening to Dialed Up.